This is the Power 98.7 Podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 Podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
It is 6 minutes after 11 o'clock and this is the third hour of Power Talk. The Thembisile Lucia Yende Foundation is going to hold a memorial lecture this weekend, tomorrow. At that forum, they will be, the family and the foundation will be addressing the social injustices that they say the Justice Department has demonstrated. It's an opportunity for the SAPS and the NPA to tell society about the protocols and procedures that govern their respective departments. If you have forgotten the name of Thembisile Yende, let me take you back to 2017, where her body was found at a substation in Ekurhuleni. There was a court case, there was an arrest and a court case that emanated out of that. And the person who was taken into custody had those charges provisionally withdrawn against them. The family at the time expressed a great deal of disappointment at ESCOM, but also at the justice authorities, because they do not believe that enough was done in this case. There were a number of allegations made as to what the motive in this case would have been, but to date, it has not been resolved. And so I want to welcome Mboneni Twala Kayende, who's the chairperson of the Thembisile Yende Foundation, to the studio this morning. Thank you very much for your time. I know that these are difficult circumstances when you are memorializing the memory of your sister, I believe it is, but also raising some really serious questions about gaps in this particular case, and the fact that there is no justice for your family when it comes to what happened that ultimately resulted in your sister's fate.
Thank you very much, Imani, for having me on your show. I guess this issue of social injustice, it actually came to light, you know, soon as after we lost Thembisile Lucia Yende. You know, there's always this thing that if something is not directed to you, you'll never know how it feels. So immediately after we lost Thembisile Lucia Yende, that's when we felt that there is really injustice in South Africa. You know, we got opened to a whole new world where we then got exposed to the unfairness from the courts, the unfairness from the police. Because if you look at my sister's case, she was lying in the office for 13 days, decomposed, but there were people walking up and down, reporting for duty every single day, but no one knew nothing as to what happened to her. And as a family, we thought that this would be an easy case to crack, you know, because obviously there's a register of people coming in and out every single day. But now, how is it that...
And there's CCTV footage.
And there's CCTV footage. And right up until today, there is no arrest besides that one of that was provisionally withdrawn. And we feel that, you know, this injustice, it obviously involves corruption. And as a family, you know, we're not only gonna... Because clearly, at this moment in time, we feel that the police are incapable of investigating. You know, we feel that let us stretch our hands and do something about it. You know, we need to ask questions. And the reason why we're hosting this memorial lecture is not only to challenge the issue of my sister, but we've had other issues. Because I'll give you an example. There was a time when we got involved in a case of a murder of a young couple that was murdered by a taxi owner. Now, with all the circumstantial evidence placing the taxi owner on the scene, the Springs Court decided that, no, we're not going to prosecute on murder. We'll only prosecute on gun negligence, which was a surprise. And that's when we got involved as the family of the Yende, and we got involved, the media and everyone. And guess what? The Department of Public Prosecution comes back, sits down with us and says, you know what, guys, there was human error that we had to withdraw the murder charges. It was human error. So question is, how many human errors are out there? How many people are facing the social injustice of human errors, which are so blank you can actually see, especially if all the circumstantial evidence places the person on the scene?
Just as a point of curiosity and interest, what happened in that case after that admission? And did, was that admission on record? Was it something that the family of the murdered person was able to take up and you know, move further with?
Most definitely. Everything was on record. And luckily, the charges were reinstated. You know, as we speak now, the case is going to High Court.
And but had you, the point you're making is, had you not intervened, had you not questioned, another family wouldn't have the prospect for justice.
Most definitely. That's what I, exactly what I'm saying.
I'm so struck by what you said at the beginning. Until you are in it, you never know how it feels. No one expects to interface with police, the court, lose someone under these circumstances. You become an expert in something you were completely alien, that was completely alien to you before. And as you get into it, you realize just how big it is, how problematic it is, and how unfair it can be. And I think that for me is what resonates the most out of what you said just now, because let us not forget that your sister was young. I'm not saying that if you're older, you don't have the right to life, but I'm saying she was in the prime of her life. She was conducting her affairs. She was doing her duty. She had a family who needed her, who loved her, and a family who went without answers as to her whereabouts for almost 2 weeks. And I'm sure that somewhere in your recollection of how she died would be the fact that she was left alone, that her body was just there. That must be a terrible pain to bear.
It is terrible. And I think the only way we decided to deal with this pain, you know, instead of sitting at home, as much as hurt as we were, you know, we thought that let us share the pain with the other families that are going through the same thing that we are going through, which is injustice. And lately, with the growing scourge of gender-based violence, women being killed every day, you know, the other thing that you'd pick up is that most of these perpetrators are known, but why are there no arrests? What's happening? You know, we then start asking questions. Hence, we formed the Thembisile Lusha Yende Foundation to then advocate on behalf of the victims and their families. Because one thing that I've realized, most people don't question the system. Once the judicial system makes a ruling, that's it. You live with it, you know. So most people are not aware of their rights. Most people are not aware of their responsibilities. So in most cases, people tend to relax.
They just let it go.
They just let it go.
On that note, I'd like to open up the lines to our listeners on 0861-987-000. The foundation, as you hear Mbuneni describe it to us, is meant to be an agent, a lobbyist for families who feel like they may have been maltreated in the justice system, may have been maltreated by police. You can hear some of the obvious questions that maybe people don't ask because they simply don't know it's a question that they can ask. They don't know that there are rights that they have. In a story, of course, that involves the courts and police or institutions that seem to be more powerful than them. If you have some niggling questions around cases you might have been involved in or a miscarriage of justice, I'd love to hear from you on 0861-987-000. And let's see if these are cases and these are stories we can put before the foundation that they can add under their banner of activism as the days and months proceed. This lecture is happening tomorrow, Mbuneni, and you have the Justice Department, I believe, the SAPS and the NPA will be attending.
That's correct. It's happening tomorrow at 12. There we've extended the invitation to the Justice Department.
Do they accept?
They have accepted, though our wish was to have the honorable minister himself, you know, to come in and lecture us, because the purpose why we brought this memorial lecture, we feel that as a society we are not clued up as to what protocols and systems that guides our Justice Department, that guides the NPA and the police, you know. And we also, it goes both ways. Sometimes we hurl insults to the Justice Department and the police simply because we don't know the facts. So we thought that this is an opportunity for the community to be lectured on the protocols that if you open a case, expect A, B, and C.
To be informed, almost, to be introduced.
Yes.
You know, I'm so with you, Mbuneni, on assumptions we make about how certain agencies and institutions must work. But until we know operationally what it's about, until we know what they can and cannot do, until they're interrogated on certain things, we simply will be making, you know, those statements or bearing those assumptions in ignorance. And so it would have been a useful opportunity, as you say, for them to really introduce themselves to the community. That's ultimately who their primary clients are. It is who they, you know, the core interest group that they serve are.
Mm. That is absolutely true. You know, we thought, you know, this is actually a perfect opportunity because we feel that the police, the NPA, they needed to give themselves time to educate people on the processes when a case is open. Because right now, as the gender-based violence scourge is growing, you'll find that the victim, who most probably would have been dead by then, had reported a case, went back to the police station to close the case, you know, and went back again to open a case against the same perpetrator, which would be the boyfriend or the husband. So we feel that, you know, the community is not aware that once you open a case, there's logistics in between, because that case needs to be investigated. The state's resources, they go out there to, you know, find witnesses and everything. And if you come back to close that case, what does it say? And what it also does, it demotivates the police who are actually investigating these cases, because they know that she was here last week to open a case. Now she closed it. Now she's back again, you know. It's demotivating, you know. So we feel that people need to understand the intensity that goes with opening a case, and especially if it's crime related, you know, you need to understand the logistics behind it. You can't really open and close as you wish.
Or what you do about your own credibility during that process, whether people will believe you or not. And whether, you know, by opening a case, what that implies. You know, people could close cases for a number of reasons. They could be pressured. There could be a threat on their lives to kind of close, you know, to put an end to that. Mm-hmm. But if they realize that it's actually going to just empower or embolden the perpetrator in these cases, they would be less, they would be more resistant to doing so. I think it is a wonderful opportunity to appraise people of their rights. Mm-hmm. I think as well, to our listeners, for those of you who are dissatisfied with the way your cases were concluded, cases that were unfairly withdrawn, cases that have turned cold in the hands of the state, whether there was prosecution or no prosecution, or in cases where those who've been accused of really serious crimes got either a fine or a slap on the wrist. I'd love to hear from you on 0861 987 000. Where is the case? Where is your sister's case at this point? We had an arrest, as you were talking about. There was a person taken into court. It was one David Ngwenya, and at the time, the allegation was that they were concerned that your sister knew about his alleged copper dealings and was going to report his conduct or what he was doing to the managers. Mm-hmm. And basically, this happened as a way of silencing her. That case, as I say, was thrown out of court, or it was provisionally withdrawn. And my understanding of provisional withdrawal is that when more evidence comes to light, that case can then be reignited on the same charge.
That is absolutely true. I love that part that you just said now, that, you know, we had to understand what provisionally withdrawal means. If I was an ordinary citizen who was ignorant and I was told that the charges will be provisionally withdrawn, most probably I would have been so upset. And that's where you'd find most communities, they take the law into their own hands, because we were definitely going to wait for David Ngwenya to come out, and mob justice will definitely serve him correct. But then we had to understand what it meant provisionally with provision withdrawal. So, you know, as far as the case is concerned, it's still as we have left it, provisionally withdrawal. Nothing, no arrests have been made, and
but is it still being investigated?
It's still being investigated. But what worries me the most is that, you know, the last time after her body was found on the 29th, on the 30th, okay, the family was, you know, in shock. On the 31st, we went to picket outside Eskom. And as we went inside the premises, you know, where her body was found, I started taking pictures around. And one of the pictures that I took was of cameras that were facing the room where her body was found. Now, just to, you know, fast forward, this year, when we went back with the investigating officer to say, I've got a question about one camera, what is it saying to you? And he said there was no camera there. And I had to go show him that it was there. They had removed it. Now, question is, her body was found, the cameras are removed, and you know what the explanation was? Those cameras were not working for 4 years. How would you have a camera in a national key point that has not been working for 4 years?
And no one knew about it?
No one questions it.
Were questions asked of the site manager?
the questions were asked, I mean, even one question that actually broke my heart, you know, was the people that were working there, that a person was lying here for 13 days. Couldn't you smell anything? And the answer that they got was like, no, we thought it was like dead chicken or bones, because maybe she used to eat all the KFCs and threw the bones in the bin. But I mean, there's a difference between a smell of a chicken and the smell of a human being. You know, it's so heartbreaking. And we feel that the investigation is not doing enough, you know. And I mean, if you look at the previous case of the two security officers that were recently gunned down, and the perpetrators were found in KZN. And question is, who, just as far as justice is concerned, who has the right to justice? Is it those with money? Is it those without money? Is it those whose cases are on the spotlight, or those whose cases are not on the spotlight? And right now, as a family, we feel that we're up against the giant. You know, Mr. David Ngwenya, he might have been connected, you know, but we feel that there's a lot of people who are involved in this, you know, because there's no way that cameras would not be working. Some would go missing. A person would be lying there for 13 days. And Eskom would be quiet about it.
But also because you have to do your own investigation. I mean, if you didn't have the foresight to take pictures there of what the room looked like in the immediate aftermath of her disappearance and her death, you would not have a leg to stand on. It would be conjecture. There was a, you'll say there was a camera, the guy will say there wasn't, and you have no way of proving that. So you had to make sure you had your own ducks in a row. Let's go to Lorato in Kempton Park. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. Good morning to you, man. I'm talking to Gerald Khan.
Sorry, Lorato will come to you now. Gerald in Centurion, good morning.
Good morning to you, ma'am.
Yeah, go ahead. We've lost Gerald. Lorato in Kempton Park, good morning.
Good morning, ma'am. Thank you for taking my call.
It's a pleasure.
It is very sad to hear Mboneni talking about the case or the status quo as it is now, Iman. And just having listened to the women who were relating their stories at the gender summit yesterday, you know, to say the worst of this is how the system is almost formed, or at least put together, to oppress those who seek justice, you know. And I'm glad that they are not feeling defeated and feeling like there's nothing that can be done, and instead, out of this, they are even working on almost a restorative justice kind of initiative, right, in this lecture that is an educational piece, right? I want to put out something, Iman. You know, I am happy that he talks and he points out the issue of education of Ra, right? What worries me, Iman, is that, and to his point, that even if you are educated, Iman, even if you know your rights, but if the experience that you get when you go and lay a charge at the police station and your experience is so horrible, you know, even that knowledge of your rights almost goes out of the window, you know. And so for me, I think over and above that, it is good that there's somewhere where we're starting about teaching people about their rights. But most importantly, we need to inculcate this thing of, you know, the responders or the people who take cases, the investigative officers, the prosecutors, being a little bit more sensitive in how they deal with this, because the user experience almost turns everything sour.
Yeah, and yeah. Thanks for that.
Thank you, man.
Lorato, thank you very much for that. Gerald in Centurion, good morning.
Good morning to you, ma'am.
Welcome. Go ahead.
Yes. Ma'am, I'm just explaining this of the violence against the women and children. Ma'am, I've got four kids. I've got four daughters. I'm hating a man who's beating the woman and the children. Ma'am, I'm 54 years old. Provided on this 54 years old, my first one is 37 years old.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Since then, I never hands up and beat my daughter, any one of them, even my wife. I've got my wife. We married for 26 years around now. But ma'am, what makes me to call Power FM? Every day I listen to Power FM. I hear the president yesterday when he was said that the plan must be done of
trying to solve this problem of the what you call violence against the women,
yes,
and children. Ma'am, but the only problem what I've got is Gerald Kanye. Ma'am, I'm telling you, on Monday I'm going to court. I wonder whether I'm disturbing the court or what, but I'm really not meaning to disturb the court. Ma'am, I never done anything to my wife. My wife, but she managed to go to the police and tell the police that I have beaten her and I have chasing her with the axle. Ma'am, my wife, she wants to take my house. I've got a house. I started to be with this lady. She was having a daughter, a boy, 6 months old boy. That boy, he's growing up today. He's 26 years.
Oh, so I think if I understand you correctly, Gerald, you feel like you are being unfairly accused. This case is now going to court. You've been with her for a long time. You've helped her raise even her own child as your own, and you feel incredibly betrayed.
Exactly, ma'am. You know, the only thing what worries me, I don't know the law much more than what I am. Ma'am, on Monday, I'll come back to you, I'll ask your name and whatever, because I've got a lawyer who is standing for my case.
But okay. Gerald, because of time, I'm going to leave it there. But I think that a lecture such as this one is one that you should attend, because here it is where you'll find out a lot more about your rights. In this case, it sounds like you are really, really hurt by what's happened to you and you feel like it is so unfair. I strongly urge that you go through and be a part of the foundation's lecture, which is taking place tomorrow. And I'll ask Mboneni in a short time just to share with us the details around the logistics. Queen, you're in Vonderus. Good morning.
Hi, this is Queen. Mboneni, my brother, he knows me by the name of Tholakele Mlangeni. How are you?
I'm good, and you, Tholakele?
I'm good. I just want to say big ups to the foundation and the family. And it is so sad, and it hurts to talk about something you are so close to. You know, it's so easy to read about such stories from newspapers or see in TV or hear from radio. But once it hits home, that's when you start to realize that this thing is huge. So in essence, I just want to say we are behind you, and I urge each and everyone, also Lokshini, to come, because we don't have such lectures, Lokshini. Mm. We don't know our rights. We don't know where to, you know, because cases are being closed left and right. You don't know what the end of such cases.
Mm.
So I'd like to urge everyone to just come and listen. And a big thumbs up to the family and to the foundation.
Thanks so much for that, Tolly. Appreciate it. Just for Gerald's benefit, would you just let us know where and when this is happening?
Okay, the event is happening tomorrow at Apostolic Faith Mission Church, that is in Guatemala. The address is number 6017 Munyane Street. And the closest prominent intersecting street is Khaswane. It's happening from 12 right up until 4. And we have the person who will be delivering the lecture, the keynote speaker, is Mr. Buang Jones from the South African Human Rights Commission. And we also have Mr. Advocate Matric Lupondo from the NPA, and also the station from the SAPS, we have the station commander, Brigadier. Okay, I'll remember her name.
Okay.
But also, we would also have our guests as Mr. Panyaza Lusufi, the Minister of Technology and Science. We're trying to bring education to this. We believe that an educated nation is actually would tends to make better choices.
So this is happening 12 to 4 p.m. in Kwatema, 6017 Munyane Street.
Munyane Street.
Is there a Twitter handle, social media that people can go to just to find out details if they miss these?
They can actually just check at the Thembisile Lusha Yende Foundation page on Facebook.
Okay.
That's what we have for now.
Go there to Thembisile Lusha Yende Foundation page. It is on Facebook if you want to find out more. Gerald, I strongly urge that you go through tomorrow. Thank you so much for talking to me, Mboneni. It's 11:30.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.